So, officially, hello. Welcome to another LaRouche Youth Movement class. And we're going to, just so people know what we're going to do today, we're going to start with a roundup to build a little picture in our minds of what happened in this last week. And how does that fit in the history of the world in which we live in, right? Because after that, we can watch a video that we have on our website. I don't know, you might have seen it, some people, 1989, part 2. And then we'll go to study the Glass-Steagall bill, which was repealed in 1999. And this is a bill that allowed for more complex insanity
financial world.
Yeah, the financial collapse. It just brought the financial collapse a lot faster. Okay? And but before we get to all this, I want to make it clear what is the purpose of this movement.
The youth movement?
Yeah, well, why did LaRouche decide to get into politics 45, 50 years ago? Why did he form this LaRouche Youth Movement? What are we doing here tonight, you know? Because basically what this movement does, which nobody else has done in recent history, is that it answers the question most people have asked before, but few people have researched it far enough to get an answer. And that basically is the question of what is the purpose of being a human being, right? So what LaRouche is saying, what we're saying, what we have to educate the population to know, to say, but more to know and to do, is to be creative. Because that's really what we were meant to be, in the way that we were created.
Yeah, because it's the best asset a human being can have. Right?
Sorry?
It's the best thing a human being can have. It's creativity.
Yeah.
And evolution.
So, I want you guys to be thinking about that, because it's important to remember. You might come up with examples in your own mind of people who are saying that they wanna know what life is all about and all that. But it's where we have there's a paradox, because most people, they say these things that they want to know, but then when you present them with a plan of how they're going to do that or what it is that they have to do, some people reject that and they want to run away, and they say, all of a sudden, I don't want to be human. I want to be an animal or do whatever animals do, which is whatever they feel like doing. Mm-hmm. Right? But we're saying, no, you don't. There's an answer to your question of what does it mean to be a human being, and we're going to help you discover that, but we're also going to make you realize that you can't do it alone. You cannot do it in your own apartment or your own
world.
Your own little world or your own internet site, right? So, so you have this situation where the whole possibility of being creative to build, either to build an economy or to make creative discoveries or creative breakthroughs, is almost made illegal or impossible. Because of what? You have an economic system which is basically breaking down, and it's easier for people to make money by cheating than it is by working. So that's one thing. And the other thing is that people don't really know. They haven't had an example of what an economy is, so they don't really know, even if they were to be in charge of the world, what it would get people to do. Most people would say, well, let them do whatever they want to do. But that's not a very good idea. You need to provide a certain leadership, a certain answer to the question that people are looking for. And that's what LaRouche is doing. LaRouche is saying, I have a mind and I'm going to use it, and I can discover things and I can know that they are true, and I'm going to help other people discover that they are true. One of the things he's been saying before everybody else, because he discovered this idea before anybody else, was that the system, the economic system, was going to collapse. And now, here we are, 40, 50 years after his first political interventions into the public life, and the system is still not fixed. People have still not understood what somebody was able to understand a long time ago. So why is it? Is it that LaRouche didn't want people to know? Did LaRouche try to not make it known and make profit from his discovery?
Secret knowledge?
Charge people to go on the website and get to pay for the answers? You know? No, you have a culture which was made dumbed down, right? Or made to be oriented away from what it means to be a human being. So even though you had human beings acting like human beings before, all of a sudden there was people who thought it was in their own interest to have people act not like human beings, not creatively. And so we're in you take the situation, you take what's going on today, and you look at what Henry Paulson is doing in the United States as the Treasury Secretary, dealing with the collapse of the whole economic system. And does he try and help out human beings who are suffering, losing their homes, losing their jobs, unable to pay their credit card debt, or no income, big amount of debt? Is he going out of his way to help these people gain back their dignity of what it means to be a human being, educating them on a purpose for this suffering, a reason why they're going through that? No. He's saying, give me patience, or I'm going to ask you to have patience, because I'm trying to rob you, and I don't want you to figure it out. So please be patient.
Yeah, just wait.
I need this time to rob more money out of you. So can you play Nintendo, please? Can you watch a movie tonight?
Je comprends pas s'ils ont déjà des milliards et des milliards, donc il faut rien parce qu'ils ont déjà tout ce qu'ils veulent.
Mm-hmm.
Je comprends pas. Ils doivent avoir un intérêt à voir les gens souffrir, à part un intérêt à avoir un maximum d'argent.
Well, c'est que there's a problem because they're losing everything. Ils perdent leur argent. Parce que leur système, the system is not a real system. It's not a lawful system. So the system cannot maintain the false money that they are used to stealing. Huh? So the only wealth that exists is the wealth you create. But the thing is, their laws, they haven't realized, they're so stupid that they haven't realized that the very laws that they made put in place to steal money is destroying the ability for them to have something to steal from.
Because they want to destroy us. I mean, that's their plan. Mm.
Yeah. I mean, you have a lot of evil people or evil ideas or very just plain wrong ways to look at the world that these people... When you are wrong and you have strength, you can maybe get by and get people to do things which are wrong because you force them to by force. But the universe did not make life or human beings to be chaotic, did it? Is the universe conceived in a way where everything was made to be chaotic? Where everything is supposed to be out of balance and out of order? Let's study the stars. Are the stars organized in a jumbled mess, just thrown there, and because somebody liked this planet there, he put it there because it liked, and just arbitrary? Because he wanted to, I don't know, to please the gods, the oligarchs? Is that how the universe is organized?
He was pressed for time.
Huh?
Pressed for time.
They were too busy. He couldn't get things just right, so he said, I'll do it later.
Delegated.
I mean, we have to realize that if we want to have even the oligarchs to survive, we're going to have to get human beings acting like human beings. If only for us to build things for the oligarchs to steal, right? But the thing is, the irony is right now that what they think has always worked in the past, where they destroy us, we rebuild and they steal back from us. There's a problem with this happening this time because you have a guy like LaRouche, who's basically answered the question of what it meant to be human being. He said, I have to be creative with my life, and I'm going to teach that. I'm going to make sure other people are creative. So I'm going to make it a point of my life being spent understanding the most I can about how this universe works, because I can, because I'm a human being, because I'm not an animal. I can figure out all this stuff, and the more I do that, the more I discover these lawful principles and get them out to the people, the more I'll have set up a system which can be taken up by the leadership of humanity to eliminate the oligarchy forever. So they should pay attention to what Lynn is saying. if they want a future. But the other irony is that if they do pay attention to what LaRouche is saying, they might learn something. They wouldn't like that, but that might happen. They're not going out to do that, but they might make a breakthrough. Even then. If they read enough of it, it might just seep in. I don't know. They might just understand, because, I don't know.
So is there a reason why nobody listens to LaRouche? I mean, he's all been right. He has been right with his forecasting since like 30 years.
But that's not true. It's not true that nobody listens to LaRouche.
Yeah, ambassadors and leaders from around the country.
No, the Strategic Defense Initiative.
The Reagan announced.
Do you know about the Strategic Defense Initiative?
Yeah, there's a plan. On my watch, I don't see it. We're going to see it in the film.
Yeah.
But he became so dangerous for them that they had to make him more silent.
Okay.
Well, that's a good segue for what I wanted to get into today, in the sense that basically LaRouche had a webcast October 1st, which was a Wednesday, and then every time he has a webcast, he changes the course of history. Yeah. It's a historical webcast. And if we remember his webcast of July 2007, LaRouche said, okay, this system is about to go down. Everybody was saying, oh, everything is strong. The fundamentals are strong. We're doing good. People are making money. Everybody's happy. But then three days later, you had the housing bubble pop. Nobody was willing to say that. Nobody knew that. Nobody was thinking. But then one human being thinking, even though he was alone in saying this, he was right. All the other people were wrong. So it goes to show that you don't have to be having popular ideas to be right. You just have to have the right idea, or the truthful idea to be right. And that says something about the universe.
Yeah.
Hmm? So, LaRouche is... He's been influential in that he was able to convince a president of the United States to listen to him and to send him on missions to Russia in the 1980s, promoting this strategic defense initiative, as is as we go through in this video, which everybody should watch, called 1989, on the website, part one.
We are going to watch it now, right?
Well, we're going to watch part two.
But I think they left it in there.
Well, we'll see.
He convinced which president to go to?
Reagan. Ronald Reagan.
Reagan?
Yeah.
To go to Russia?
Well, the thing is, it goes through in the movie, but basically, LaRouche was a candidate for the same election that Ronald Reagan was a candidate. They were both presidential candidates of the United States in 1980, I think.
Yeah.
And so...
Is that true?
79 is the election.
He actually gained the Democratic nominee position.
He wasn't a Democratic...
Or was he independent?
No, he was a Democratic nominee. He was not nominee, but because you have other candidates. The thing is, LaRouche was one of the pre-candidates for president.
Pre-candidates, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the thing is, you have this debate between Republican and Democrats or this election, and they have in New Hampshire, you know, the main candidates, but they had the second debate between no main candidates. This means the people who nobody believed these people were going to be elected, but they were running, they had a petition, they put their name on the ballot. So they say, okay, we have the principal two candidates, you know, George Bush and candidates, let's have the debate with these guys, see what they have to say.
And Reagan was one of those people.
So Reagan was, you know, governor of California. You know, he's an artist. And the thing is, nobody believed that this guy going to be elected. So the thing is, he was elected. He was elected because we destroyed George Bush with the George Bush authorized biography.
But the key to it was that at this convention, at this debate, LaRouche was sitting directly next to Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
And filled his ear with ideas. And then during Reagan's presidency, LaRouche was deployed by the Reagan administration to conduct back-channel talks with Russia around this joint initiative, or this initiative for a joint technology driver project, which was using laser beam technology to make nuclear weapons obsolete. And Reagan took up that cause and announced that he was going to do that, and that's when everybody freaked out and realized that LaRouche had to be taken out of the picture.
Because he changed the strategic situation in the planet forever, really.
But this is ironic, you know, because that at one point, LaRouche had the United States ear of a president going along with his policy. And he made a proposal to Russia, which Russia rejected. On peut expliquer vite là.
Ce qui se passe, c'est dans les années 60, les Américains et les Russes faisaient des expériences avec le bombe hydrogène. Et ce qui se passe, ils ont fait, avant 1967, c'était légal de faire des explosions atmosphériques. Le problème, c'est quand tu fais une explosion atmosphérique, ce qui se passe, l'air va devenir ionisé à cause de la température avec les radiations. C'est-à-dire les atomes d'oxygène et d'hydrogène, ce qui se passe, vont perdre leur électricité. Ce qui se passe, cette air va devenir conductive pour l'électricité. C'est-à-dire que ça sur une zone de 30 km qui va être conductive pour l'électricité. Les effets, c'est qu'elle devient comme une tempête, c'est-à-dire électromagnétique. Ce qui se passe, les effets de cette tempête électromagnétique que tu peux créer dans l'atmosphère à 10 km hauteur, peut détruire avec la force magnétique, électromagnétique, microwave, tous les systèmes électroniques et électriques qui se trouvent dans une surface de 5 km au-dessus. C'est-à-dire que tu vas faire une explosion, tu ne vas pas tuer personne, tu vas ioniser de l'air autour d'une partie des États-Unis ou de la Russie. C'est-à-dire, moi, je vais être capable d'éliminer tous les systèmes électroniques, électriques, téléphones, etc., etc., sur une surface grande comme les États de New York. Okay. Le problème, c'est que si cette umbrella, va rester là pour une période de 6 heures, okay? Que le gaz graduellement va perdre sa conductivité et sa caractéristique. C'est-à-dire, moi, je vais être capable de continuer de jeter des bombes nucléaires balistiquement pour bombarder ton pays, mais tu ne peux pas me réenvoyer des missiles à partir de ta territoire, parce que les systèmes électroniques, vont, même s'ils sont protégés quand ils sont sur la Terre, ce qui se passe en traversant ce bouclier électromagnétique, leur système de guidage électromagnétique va être détruit. C'est-à-dire, ça donne des avantages des pays qui lancent une attaque préventive, qui attaque première, va avoir des supériorités stratégiques dans sa attaque de détruire l'adversaire. Le problème, c'est avec la position de SS-22 et le Pershing canalement, ce qui se passe, la distance entre les deux adversaires, c'est seulement 9 minutes. C'est-à-dire, à cette distance, avec la vitesse, avec la pénétrabilité de ce missile, ce qui se passe, tu n'as pas le temps d'appeler le président des États-Unis ou le président russe et demander la permission d'utiliser le bombe nucléaire. C'est-à-dire, le danger pour une attaque militaire ou pour une attaque accidentelle, qui peut arriver parce qu'il y a toujours problème des ordinateurs et tout comme ça, peut être créé une guerre mondiale.
En gros, c'est important d'avoir une idée générale. Là. On peut étudier ça plus tard.
Okay.
L'idée qui est, the point is that the point is that you have the United States going with LaRouche at one time, and then the Russians saying, "We're not going to go, because we're afraid that the United States will gain such an advantage from this, and that will have a disadvantage, that they have the upper hand," kind of thing. They didn't believe the intention of the Americans to do something to help Russia as well.
It was a Khrushchev
was Andropov.
Yeah, Andropov. So basically, the irony is that last week, or this weekend, you had a major move in the institution of Russia, signaling to the world by having a program on the international financial crisis and inviting Lynn for an interview and of the whole 20 minute whenever they reference an economist who knows anything about what's going on, they go to LaRouche. And not only that, but they go to LaRouche with his plan for a four powers solution. Or the idea of a new Bretton Woods, or a new financial architecture, which is echoing the same thing that people like President Medvedev is saying, and also what like Prime Minister Putin, and also the Minister Yukinen Yukunen, which is the head of the railway system in Russia, and he was also the candidate to replace Putin.
Yes, he was one of the people who were considered to be the
candidate. Okay. So you have a major move, because LaRouche just had this webcast a few days before, and LaRouche is saying, "Listen, guys, this is not a serious, this is not a normal business as usual day. This is not. We have a situation where the United States, the country who fought the British Empire for to develop a nation based on a principle, based on natural law, based on the American Constitution." Is now using military, is threatening the Congress people and the senators with military force if they don't vote to accept a bill. So that's fascism. That's not the United States.
So they're threatening people to, if they vote against the bailout thing, they're gonna get killed.
Well, think about this. It's like the British Empire, this oligarchy, financial power, is freaking out because their system is collapsing, and they start to realize that this is happening, and that they know that LaRouche is there, and having LaRouche in the United States is like saying Roosevelt came back from the dead. And that's the worst nightmare.
So you're saying the oligarchy that provoked this are freaking out of the thing they've done to?
They're freaking out because they might lose everything.
Them too, right?
The power, yes.
Because you have a situation where every American are waking up to the fact that they're getting screwed. And when you have people getting screwed, and you have somebody like LaRouche and this youth movement telling them that there's a solution which won't cost them anything but making things better for them if they only mobilize, if they're only able to tell the British oligarchy to screw off, get away from here, then we can get back to what it means to being human. And that's why we should be here. Anything else you're doing which is not helping to be creative, which is not fighting to develop an orientation of society, not just of your own life, but society towards being creative and building a future, then what the hell are you doing? That's the question. That's the question that is before us. And the Russians, fortunately, are not so stupid as to miss the chance to not do everything, but do what they can do. Tu comprends l'anglais un peu?
Si, c'est
l'or. Oh, muy bien. L'anglais espagnol. So I was just saying, the Russians have made a big move. I don't know if you've been following, but they sent a message to the world that LaRouche doesn't have to go and convince the world that the Russians, will they or will they not join in this fight to return the world to a credit system and to preserve the principle of sovereign nation states and rebuild the world. They're not going to have to convince the Russians of that. That's not the big problem. That's pretty clear now for anybody who's paying attention. What is not so clear is, are the Americans... is the Bush government so stupid as to put the guns on its own population? Because you have big threats coming from our sources that are saying that there's an army division that is ready to be used against the very people or the congressmen in the United States. So this is not a pussycat fight. You know, it's not a little game no more. But then if you answer this question I asked at the beginning of the class, what does it mean to be human, and it means to be creative? Well, that means that if you understand that in the right way, it means that you have a certain understanding of what it means, the immortality of the human soul. And you might not live forever, but when you are alive, you can do something which is creative, which is to the benefit of civilization to come. And so that when people look back on your life, it doesn't have to be like the kind of comments people will have on George Bush, or the kind of comments they'll have looking to these wimps who passed the bailout, and they're going to be like, who the hell, what the hell were these guys doing here? Who the hell gave them life, or to, why did they waste their time here? We don't want, the thing is, we don't get judged by the people who live around us while we're alive. We get judged by the people who come centuries later and decades later, and they say, listen, whatever this guy did, whatever LaRouche did, thank God this guy was there, because where would we be without leadership, true leadership? Where would we be without all these young people that are being activated as we speak in the United States to join this revolutionary fight? All the people in Canada, all the people in Italy, Europe, all around the world, you have people saying, listen, I can take time off my space, and I can take time off whatever I do to pleasure myself, and I can get involved in what it really means to be alive, what it really means to be human being, to be creative. And so if anybody is sent here on Earth and discovers that they're able to be creative, and they live according to this, not just understand the theory of that, but actually live with the consequence that it entails, in the sense that you might lose something or even your life, then that person has reached success, true success. Well, or maybe the evaluations of the pop media on the newspapers might not agree that this is success, but the real evaluator of whoever or how this force that put you in the life in the first place, I mean, that's the kind of idea you want to impress, or that's the kind of person you want to impress. Or the civilizations to come, if you understand that human beings are immortal, will always be around to celebrate the good work that good people do. And so you don't really die if you're immortal, do you? But so we have the Russians saying, okay, well, this is serious. We're gonna make a statement, we're going to take LaRouche seriously, and we're going to do something. We can't do everything because we don't have the American Constitution, we don't have the tradition, we don't have the culture tradition. Mm-hmm. What did you say?
The power.
The power? Well, it is not legal for them to do that, what the United States can do legally, which is to use their constitution as the justification for putting the whole system into bankruptcy and initiating a credit system, which is based on the law of their constitution, which actually tells them to not do it is illegal.
Yeah.
What they're doing right now is illegal.
Yeah.
To have the British monetary system pervade and destroy
their country
and the people's lives, that is illegal. And if you had people in Congress and in the Senate who had guts, they would say that, and they would bring these people and start a trial to put these guys in jail.
But now they're afraid to be shot.
So now
in concentration camps.
So now it's really important to discover what's the whole point of being alive, because either way they might lose that. Either they're going to be shot by the people who are angry that nothing gets done, and they're losing their homes, they're losing everything, or they're going to get shot by those, the army that are being hired, the mercenaries, or whoever is being stupid enough to not realize that it's illegal to serve your nation in the army and then kill the very people that you're supposedly defending. So that's serious stuff. But so it's serious, but then you have a lot of optimism because of LaRouche. Because LaRouche is there, and I mean, I wanted to, yeah. You have a moment in the webcast where LaRouche does something I've never really seen him do in such a way as he did in the webcast, where he goes and basically says, just find it here.
Shoot me then.
Yeah, he said, you know, maybe you guys are afraid, and maybe you don't see anybody around you that has any guts. So I'll be the one. I'll put myself on the line. So he says, I put my life on the line here, he said. They're out to kill people like me here in the United States.
I defy them.
And I say, kill me. I defy you. And if someone like me, LaRouche says, has the guts to stand up to these guys, then maybe others will. If I don't have the guts to do that, then no one will. So this is the kind of situation where I think it's Shelley or Frederick Schiller. Frederick Schiller calls these, help me out here if you know,
the story?
It's this idea that you have these opportunities, these times in history where a great moment comes and then you have a great moment where people can make breakthroughs, they can learn a lot of powerful ideas very quickly. And it's when those moments come and that the people are big enough to be able to make the changes that is necessary in them and make the breakthroughs in the ideas and not retreat in fear. It is those moments which create revolutions. And that's the moment we're in right now. The kind of moment, the same quality of moment. And so the idea of what we're doing in showing people what it means to be a human being and being creative is to be so creative that we're able to prove it, that we know what it means to be creative, that we're able to teach other people what it means to be creative. Because that's really the only time you know something is when you're able to communicate it to somebody else. And so,
so little people, if they don't get it.
Yeah, if we don't get it, then we're little people who had a great opportunity and screwed it up, basically. So the people who come after, they're like, hey, why didn't you do it? You had a chance. Now we have to work doubly hard. You know, so that's one of example of one such moment that came is referenced in these series of videos that we're making on the website, which everybody should be checking as often as they can. On the 1989, LaRouche organized the basement team to work on this question, to communicate to people exactly this example of one such moment in history where you could have had a major revolution and destroy the British Empire forever. It could have been done. The 1989 video showed this scenario. All that would have had to happen would have been Russia to say, okay, we're going to be willing to risk getting involved in this agreement, which is a less of a risk than if we continue with these policies of that's going to perpetuate wars around the world. and it's going to make their economy collapse like it did. By not agreeing with LaRouche, their economy collapsed.
This was the one day they had the Russian Union, right? In the 60s?
No, this is 1989 when the Berlin Wall came down.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at that time, or just prior to that, or when was the SDI thing? Was that back in 83?
Yes, yes, okay. 1983.
So it was a little bit longer, but at the time that LaRouche was being put in prison, he was able to make one more forecast. And he said if Russia decides not to go with this cooperation policy, not to cooperate with the United States on this technology driver project, because really that was the essence of it. It just happened to be laser research, but it could have been anything. Today it's the Bering Strait Tunnel crossing. But basically that if Russia didn't cooperate with the United States, reach out and try to form some sort of a plan to have a joint project, that within 5 years the Russian economy would entirely collapse.
Mm-hmm. And it did within a few months.
LaRouche was a little off on that one. He said June, and it happened in August.
Hmm. But
something like that. He was literally months off the target.
So I want to state that. So this is interesting that the Russians did what they did, but then at the same time as that, you had the European Union. Basically, each of these nations inside the European Union started to say, hey, our banks are being bankrupt. How are we going to save our banks in our country? And then everybody figures out pretty quickly that within the Maastricht Treaty, which led to the European Union, they're not allowed to take measures independently. On one hand, they're not allowed to do something sovereign for their own nation. And on the other hand, if their banks are bankrupt, there's no lenders of last resort. So they're screwed. What are they, just going to let people die? These people in power? They're stupid. They're not that stupid. So they say, well, we got to destroy, break apart the European Union. They don't say that exactly, but they're saying these rules, which are keeping us in place, are going to have to be flexible. Because right now, what's more important is saving. Everybody's saying that they need to save their own nation. So basically, you have this idea that the principle of a sovereign nation state is more important than the European Union. So it has precedence. And so LaRouche said, you know, the Europeans are acting. They're acting their way. Not my way, but their way. That is what is happening. And there is an agreement that the present IMF system is implicitly dead. That we're going back to something like the Roosevelt system. And that it's coming from sources such as the President of France. It involves not just Europe, it involves also the G14, which includes the G8 in China, India, South Africa, Brazil, Mexico, sometimes South Korea and Australia and Nigeria. Okay. So then, okay, knowing that this is all going on, this organization, and a lot of the people who've been following us for a long time, they've always said, you know, LaRouche is good on many things, you know, but he's not always right, and he's got this crisis thing too exaggerated, you know, and that we're not really going to have a Bretton Woods right now, you know. It's not really true that we're so close to this historical. He always says that, you know, or I don't know what else they say. But the thing is, LaRouche warned them, even people in his own organization. He said, this is a moment where you can't be sexually impotent or psychosexually impotent. So what is happening, he said, is not a thing that you can report on objectively. It's as if an object that is grasping the world, you are being grasped. You are part of the world being grasped. That is the spirit of the occasion. So remember what Schiller says.
The spirit of what?
Of the occasion. Remember what Schiller's saying. He says you have these moments, the way history changes, the way the history of the world transforms itself with these revolutions, you have these moments that come with a very powerful energy, in a sense that they are ripe for creativity.
Dynamically potent?
Yeah. But how did that dynamically potent potentiality come into place? Well, in a way, the oligarchs have helped set it up by screwing up the system royally, you know. So they created a condition where there's a collapse of the system. And by going through all the extremes and by exhausting any alternatives, you have a situation where there's not many things left to do that will work. There's only LaRouche's plan left, basically. Or fascism, complete violence, and returning to a dark age.
But is that not their plan, really? From the oligarchs to have that?
What is... You think these guys have a plan?
No, you don't think that they have a plan?
You think they have a plan which is intelligent?
No, of course not.
Okay, but you're saying that... who caused all of this was the oligarchy from England, right?
But what were they trying to do?
They're trying to, like, induce mass insanity into society?
No, that might be the effects of what they're doing, but that's not what they really go for. They want to stay in power.
Okay, but you're saying that now the crisis, now the oligarchy in this place are freaking out because, what, their plan backfired on them? Or?
Well, they say, I've always been in power. How do I maintain my power? I used to be doing this, I used to be doing that. Mm. I'll try it again. I'll try it again.
Okay.
Oh, I can't try this no more. It doesn't work. I can't suppress science no more. I gotta change it. Paolo Sarpi.
Well, Cold War. So the thing is, in the Cold War, you know, you classified all the scientific research, advanced research. So part of the Cold War arrangement, because between the evil Russians and the even neoconservative British, was to suppress science by classifying everything.
L'oligarchie, ils auraient plus intérêt à changer le système qu'est-ce que le système s'écroule.
But that's the thing. The oligarchs, some of the people in the oligarchy, like in a time that Paolo Sarpi made a break from Venice, because Venice had been against science altogether, and that Paolo said, okay, well, we'll make a compromise, or if we want to survive as oligarchs, we'll have to let science be there, but the knowledge of making breakthroughs in science, that's going to be illegal. It's not going to be illegal per se, but we're going to confuse everybody with a lot of disinformation campaigns, with the invention of a character, of a super scientist, and I use the term loosely, of this reinforcement of a popularly accepted science figurehead as Newton, to show an example of all what science is great and beautiful when it's actually crap, when it's actually bullshit, when Newton is not a scientist. This is the kind of example of a campaign used by this oligarchy, which was from Venice, which moved to London, and they're saying, we're not going to tell people it's illegal to be creative, because that would be so obvious. What we're going to do is to say, look, this is a scientist. But it's crap. But I'm not going to tell you it's crap. I'm just going to tell you every university.
If you want to have a job, you have to learn it.
If somebody wants to print a book and they need money to print a book, well, it's got to be crap. If it's good, who's going to print it? The rich people don't want good ideas out there. And if they do, they want to keep them for themselves. And the people they hire. But the thing is, they can't hire people who are moral. So only stupid people like Newton, who are immoral, can be working for the oligarchy. I mean, you can have some mutants in there who they don't know which way they stand on things. But, you know, generally that's the case. And so now you have a movement of people saying we've got to go and do a Bretton Woods. Because Roosevelt did a Bretton Woods and he had a conference and we reorganized the whole economic system. The problem now gets tricky. Because some people recognize that one person has been talking about the Bretton Woods forever, and that's LaRouche. Every time LaRouche is mentioned, it's either associated with New Bretton Woods or Eurasian land bridge, which is basically the same thing. Because to build a Eurasian land bridge, you need a Bretton Woods, a Rooseveltian Bretton Woods.
And to reorganize the system, you need a Eurasian land bridge.
And you need LaRouche.
Eurasian what?
Land bridge.
The very straight between Russia and North America, right? Yeah.
But it's not only that. It's actually, there's a whole plan to connect the whole world physically with these high-speed rail. Because you want to give the opportunities for everybody to take part in a renaissance, in a rebuilding of the world. And so if the train comes by on your continent, then you'll be focusing on that. You don't have to focus on what's going on in the States and rebuilding their train system, because they'll be having plenty of things to do on their own territory. So now you have sovereignty, because you're developing your part of the world, they're developing their part of the world, yet you're all part of the same vision.
Community, yeah.
You're all being human beings. You're all being creative.
And not everybody wants to come to the United States or Canada, because everybody is happy in their own country to rebuild their own country.
And people, when they ask people amongst in the culture, they ask, what does it mean to be human again? What are we doing this for? And they're like, to make things better for the next generation.
What's the term? Eurasian land plane?
Land bridge.
Land bridge.
So, you know, it's important to recognize that we're from a culture that's completely degenerate. And if we have a few people who get out of it, they don't do it out of luck. They don't do it because it just randomly happens this way. People have to work at it, or they have to be organized by people to do this. You might not be organized by people here. You might be organized by people who are dead now. LaRouche might have been organized by Gottfried Leibniz. Right? So this makes the whole concept of what it means to be human really weird now, because now you have people organizing you who are not even here. But the ideas belong to human beings. Nobody else, no animal can discover them. So we've got a responsibility. Somebody's created us, or something created us, and gave us a power, a potential. We don't have to use it. We don't have to. I mean, we can fight wars forever. Who wants to do that? Do you meet a lot of people that think that's what they should be doing with their lives?
No, not much.
And yet, how many people say fighting, warring is just human nature?
Yeah.
Everyone says that, right? And yet, if you ask anybody, no one wants to be in a war. But yet it's human nature to be involved.
Well, the effects of the culture is to see war around you, maybe, you know, in a degenerate culture. But when everybody closes their eyes and gets in touch with this part of being human which is not seen by the senses, most people can see an alternative to war. They might not have the strength to defend that idea in front of other people, but the thing is, you have a reality of what it means to be human, which is knowable to that person if he's honest. Like, the thing is, you might have appearances that people are for war, or people are suspicious of human beings, But in reality, I mean, people know that, that human beings are special, I think. Or if they don't, then obviously we have to work hard at it to help them rediscover that.
And I think also what I understood from LaRouche is it's mostly of the time the oligarchs who are creating the wars. People in general don't like wars, but it's the oligarchy, right?
But in principle, why we have war? Why we can have war? Mm-hmm. For oil? So that's one of the things that Putin followed, right? So where the oil is coming from? You know, 200 years ago we did not have oil.
We had oil, but we didn't know.
So we discovered it. So the development in 1800s of chemistry to give us ability to use something which was nothing for us back then, for us the reserves, or like the electricity. Was no potential, was no power, was no usable before Benjamin Franklin discovered electricity. So when we are fighting a war, when we are saying we're going to fight for resources, say, we actually, while we are fighting this war, the resources are not creation by nature. They are human discoveries which discover a potential in nature which can serve the human beings.
And that we are never running out because of the reason or anything.
So the real power, the real resource is the human creativity. So if you accelerated the process of discoveries, you have empowered the humanity to eliminate every need of this humanity. For example, the budget of NASA is $7 billion.
Mais il a déjà eu des découvertes générales.
Il a plein, on peut faire beaucoup plus.
Il faut déjà servir des découvertes qu'on a déjà
faites. C'est-à-dire qu'il a une suppression artificielle de la science qu'on possède, qui peut bénéficier à tout le monde. Okay. Mais l'autre côté, il a une politique délibérée de détruire le potentiel de développement de la nouvelle science. C'est-à-dire ce 20 milliards de dollars du budget de NASA, qui représente moitié du budget professionnel qui était de l'année 60. Quand on a envoyé des gens sur la Lune. C'est-à-dire, tu compares le budget 20 milliards de dollars avec 700 milliards de dollars qu'on va gaspiller pour les banques, et tu vas dire, avec 700 milliards de dollars, on peut avoir 10 000 personnes qui habitent sur la Lune.
So it's the oligarchy. So it's the oligarchy who prevents these researching to have advances in technological discoveries.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, you see this phenomenon with how they've orchestrated this in our generation, because normally you have these times of economic collapse, you're going to have young people rise up and organize society, and they're going to create a revolution. Normally, instinctively, they're the ones that are going to do that. But what are the young peoples doing right now? Why are they not doing that as much as they should be? The oligarchy, or the way that you've downgraded science, or you made people stupid to believe that science is only limited to this empiricist method of sense certainty, right? You have the greenie phenomenon, and anyone who believes in this green thing, the politicians which trying to buy votes and try to be cool and get young voters because they're going green. Anybody who believes this is intrinsically incompetent because they have no understanding of what science is. They have no understanding of what an economy is. And they have no idea what it means to be a human being. And it's not popular to say what I'm just saying right now. But then again, the leader right now is the one who goes against popular opinion. When everybody's going the wrong way, the leader is not going to go in the wrong way. He's going to say, you got to go the other way. But it's not everybody who says something against the popular opinion, which is a leader. So you have to be able to differentiate the bullshit from what is actually true.
You notice in the papers right now, if you read the papers, that you're starting to have some language come out. People are starting to mention different things, the words that LaRouche has been talking about, because it's now too obvious. You start to hear the word oligarchy is appearing in the newspapers these days. Mm-hmm. Oligarchy is, that word is in the newspapers. It was not in the newspapers 1 year ago.
Sounds like the topic of play.
And you have and you have other ideas. So, like what Luke was just describing is important, because as this crisis becomes more and more obvious, there will be a shift in the media to try and incorporate a half-truth.
Shift and change dans les papiers, dans les articles de le journal.
Where they will use words such as words that LaRouche uses a lot.
Like New Bretton Woods.
Okay?
C'est bon signe.
Yeah. Well, it's a good sign, but this is an old trick, because the word is not the principle. Le mot n'est pas le principe. So we have to be able to recognize the principle, so that when someone uses the word but does not represent the principle, we still know that he is a liar. Right? And it becomes more and more difficult the closer we get to the high point of the crisis, because more and more newspapers have to start admitting different ideas, because the same ideas are obviously false. So they will start to admit certain ideas, but the question that we have to ask is, has this writer made a discovery? Have they come to a new realization? Or are they using these words in a false way? Because they will. It's like when my favorite example is George Bush gets up on the podium and says, democracy, George Bush,
yeah.
Democracy, freedom, patriotism.
And he repeats it.
He repeats it over and over again. And you know when he says that he's looking to try and start a war. So he's saying the word democracy, but there's no principle of democracy in what he's saying. He says freedom, but he's not interested in freedom for his people or for any other people. And he says patriotism, but he's a traitor.
Les gens, ils oublient les vrais concepts qui sont derrière les mots.
Oh, il y a la Félix Rohatyn qui parle d'un Bretton Woods system, and it's a totally fake.
C'est complètement faux.
Félix Rohatyn, c'est un fasciste banker. Il a détruit toute l'industrie, tout.
Il
parle d'un Bretton Woods, et si les gens ne voient pas la différence...
Il a décidé du Bretton Woods dans l'opinion publique.
Et les demi de demi-vérité, est-ce qu'on peut dire de demi-vérité, est le plus...
C'est dangereux.
C'est le faux, le plus dangereux. Mm-hmm. C'est comme...
Le sophisme. C'est le sophisme.
C'est un sophisme. Mm. Hein? Ce n'est pas une guerre pour la vérité, c'est un sophisme. Mm. Et la différence est très importante. C'est le plus important.
Oui.
Et c'est pour ça que nous devons développer les principes.
Les principes.
Les principes qui sont sous les mots.
Comme les poèmes que cherchaient à le faire, hein, comme Rimbaud.
Ouais.
En
français, est-ce qu'il y a l'idée, la loup dans le vêtement de la... The sheep and the wolf in sheep's clothing.
Le loup dans les vêtements de la chèvre.
Yeah.
ou du mouton.
Oui, en anglais, on dit
la
wolf, la sheep's clothing.
Mm-hmm. Tu as des démocrates qui sont des fascistes.
En français, c'est l'habit ne fait pas le moine.
Ouais, l'habit ne fait pas le moine. L'habit ne fait pas le moine.
Ouais, l'habit ne fait pas le moine.
Don't make the monk. The monk.
Right, exactly, exactly. And this is important because more and more, as people say, LaRouche is right, LaRouche is right, and more people know LaRouche is right, people who are intelligent but evil will start to use LaRouche's concepts to create another falsity.
Is they always done that with all the scientists?
Yeah.
It's like when Kepler discovered the calculus, you have...
No, Leibniz.
Leibniz works on the calculus and makes a breakthrough on that, you have Newton who comes up with a... He studies Leibniz, and then he says, oh, look, I've made calculus too. It's just... And it's easier, it's easier for you to understand it, because you don't have to think.
And example in modern history, which has to do with today, is when Roosevelt died, the intention of the Bretton Woods system was changed.
It was never put into
good use.
It was never put into reality. Like the principle that was agreed to at the conference. Was a credit system
for the whole world.
The system that was put in place when by the time the conference had been passed, Roosevelt had died. So now, a Truman decided, well, let's just put into law the whole Bretton Woods idea, but take away the punch, take away the real important idea behind of the credit system, and let's just give those British people what they want. What do they want? They want
the control of our money.
They want this. They want us to pursue the tradition of the monetary system, where the money itself is seen as God, where the money itself has value in itself, and that people go crazy and fascist for the idea of money, which is supposed to serve you, but you end up serving it.
So the intention is completely different.
The
Bretton Woods.
Can we stick to
the system American, but the Bretton Woods the Truman and the system Britain. Because
être mort, c'est être en proie au vivant. C'est une stratégie de propagande. C'est-à-dire que dès quelqu'un est mort, c'est contre lui. Comme si c'était un modèle et puis on récupère son message.
Ouais.
Is it like Meredith said he saw a video about the American Constitution being this big, you know?
Oh yeah.
And then the new Constitution being.
Well, that's a different concept. That's just how people try to pass things like this.
Yeah.
Bill,
well, that's the thing.
Or like the Lisbon Treaty, which is like 3,000 pages of garbage.
You know, this is I just printed the U.S. Constitution, so this is like 12 pages.
Really?
This is the entire.
Where did you get the?
We went to the.
We can look at this later, Ilko.
Yes.
The thing is, t'as une question?
Si y a le temps. Hein.
Ok, tu vas voir.
pourquoi, si les Russes, ils sont pas sous l'influence de l'oligarchie, pourquoi ils lancent pas des vérités, des messages comme quoi le World Trade Center c'était pas des terroristes, comme quoi c'était.
The thing is, people, anybody who's fighting a war will tell you, you might know a lot of things, but you're trying to get other people to make mistakes. And LaRouche discussed this. He has discussions with the youth movement at his home every weekend. And the idea is that you hold back a little, you don't give everything to the enemy. And you try to see how they react, and when they make a mistake, then you make them swallow their own mistake. You make them drown in their own mistake. Then you make fun of them. You make it obvious to people of their mistakes. And I imagine the Russians right now they're letting little bits of information as it's necessary, or anybody right now, when you're running a nation, it's not so easy as somebody who's only has got his own person to defend, right? The thing is, when you're coming from a tradition, and that's what we're facing right now, the moment that of revolution that we're seeing in this time in history, this revolutionary potential revolutionary time in history that we're living in, is that you have a whole system of traditions which have dominated the running of the world, where what is possible right now is to elevate, have a jumping off from a lower species of ideas, a lower species of political authority, and move into an authority of universal principles. And so if you're using universal principle as your guidelines, then you can do what LaRouche is saying and go all out and say things as they are, because you have a principle that you understand, which is backing you up, that your intention is to live according to that principle. And so you will always live 24 hours of your life into finding out what that intention needs of you, and you to get in touch with some of the lesser knowns of life, which sometimes you have to make decisions on the fly as you're going along. And if you're never used to living according to principles, you might make a big mistake when you try to do something on the spur of the moment. But if you're like LaRouche, where you're always trying to live according to principles and educate people on universal principles, so when you try to do something on the fly, it's because you've grown into a habit of being according to a principle. And so you have... the other guys are coming from a tradition where the popular opinion around you is always there, and they're saying, well, if you're a good politician, you do this thing. If you want to win a war, you did this thing. If you want to do that, you do this thing. But it's always opinions, and there's never a principle which organizes the whole together. So you have people that do things when there's enough pressure on them, or when they feel that somebody is right. They don't necessarily know, but they say, oh, I'm going to choose to go with LaRouche, okay? Because I feel that that's my best option.
You said pop opinion?
Popular opinion.
Popular
opinion. Yeah. So the thing is, there is a new concept of what it means to be a leader. It's not actually new, because you had other people in the past, but because of the baby boomer culture, it's kind of a vacuum into the history where you disappear with all this principled orientation culture. And so you have LaRouche, which has a memory coming from before the baby boomers, and he's saying, this is the way you run a country, this is the way you develop the world, and it's done by people who study science, who study universal history, who care about what it means to be human being, who care about answering questions which are not perceptible by the senses, like, what the hell are we doing here on Earth? Why did God create us? What the hell is God? Does God exist? Most questions that most people would avoid discussing in public, because they're thinking that somebody else is going to come up and destroy their opinions, and they'll be able to denounce them as bullshitters who only speak without knowing. But LaRouche knows. He's not afraid. But the thing is, you have this... But just to answer your question, I guess, I don't really know why the Russians or anybody who in power doesn't do more into being more open. A lot of things...
They're very open, so I can take something about it.
Yeah, but the thing is...
1999, Larouche was invited to speak in the Russian parliament. They had a huge conference with the parliamentarian, and Sergei Glazev, who was running the president, and he was the head of the economic section of Duma, he invited Larouche. And Larouche, you know, laid out the basis for international reorganization of the banking system, creating a new financial system, a credit system, and having a cooperation for economic development. So this proposal for building the Bering Strait Tunnel, linking the rail system of Asia across the Bering Strait, across Alaska, Canada, down to United States, and down to South America, was something which was proposed back then. So the last year in April, the Russian had a huge conference by the foreign ambassadors, and they put $20 billion for building a rail connection up to Alaska. And Linda LaRouche was invited to participate in this conference. He was not able to attend, but he sent a document for this conference. And the week after the conference, he was in Russia. He had to write a ticket over there for the birthday of his friend, one of the academicians in the Russian Academy of Science. But the thing is, this was a public conference in which they published the documentation, a paper by LaRouche, in their presentations, and they said, we are adopting this outlook. This is, they are not just making words, saying stuff. They are adopting the policy, they are putting money, effort, and resources in adopting economic policy. The same thing with the Chinese. For the last, since 1998, the Chinese are having LaRouche as their economic advisor. So this huge infrastructure policy of building the Yangtze River, you know, the dam, the Three Gorges Dam, the development of the West, the rail connection between across Tibet to India, which is under construction. This is a project which are extremely controversial. The thing is, this is not just economic policy, because the British are having two World War I and World War II to prevent this kind of collaboration, you know, building the Orient Express, you know, at the time of Otto Bismarck, across the Balkans down to Ottoman Empire, linking this rail connection in the time of Abraham Lincoln, you know, when he built the first Trans-Siberian rail, Trans-Union Pacific rail. The idea was to bring this rail connection up north through the Russians, you know, bringing to Europe. And this project, which study in this period, we have documentation about historical study in this period, and because the Russians were supporting the United States. The thing is, the only major power in the world who supported Lincoln was the Russians. They saved the Union. Okay? The collaboration between Russia and the United States in World War I and World War II was a good example. Even in the Cold War, you have a different level of collaboration between the two countries. And what happened now is the Russians are invoking this memory of collaboration. You know, Putin recently gave a speech. He said, no, it's no, you know, like collaboration we were having in World War II. I'm invoking the collaboration we had in the time of Lincoln. And this is what actually they're having president, the prime minister of Russia, you know, major, you know, political figures in Russia, invoking this kind of relationship. So the thing is, they are going with LaRouche openly. Okay? And, you know, it's the thing is, we are having a tremendous potential. In this moment, the Russians are completely for it. And they are going openly, you know, by adopting this kind of proposal.
Could you repeat what the 1999 LaRouche went to Russia to talk about?
What's happening in 1999?
International banking system?
He was talking about the reorganization of the global financial system.
You can go on the website. Recently, LaRouche was on Russian national television.
Il
a été interviewé sur la télévision nationale de la Russie.
But there is a subtitle.
I don't know.
We can give it.
Have you watched it?
No, but I have the transcript here, and I wanted to read because you said The original question was like, why don't they say more about what had happened? And the Russian documentary was a 20-minute piece, and it featured, this economic collapse that's being centered around the United States, but is hitting the whole world. It included the reality of what's going on in Europe, and the breaking up of Maastricht Treaty, okay, all of this. But at the end, this is actually taken from the transcript. It says, "The danger of war is very great. I think that the temptation to go for a quick war so that people would forget about everything is very great under these conditions. These groups are out of control," thinks political analyst and European Parliament Giulietto Chiesa. Back in 1934, at the height of the Great Depression, Marine Colonel Smedley Butler stopped a plot aimed at overthrowing President Roosevelt. A group of bankers and military men who were against the New Deal wanted to set up a dictatorship. Among the plotters was the grandfather of the current Prescott Bush. Actually, such simple solutions would be unlikely to be put into operation today. For that, there would have to be at least one Roosevelt. We don't have a Roosevelt, but we do have a LaRouche and the youth movement. And so, I mean, this is the Russians saying things that, I don't know, not a lot of people would go say on national television, that the ancestors of the Bushes were fascists going for dictatorship.
They were also considered or called English citizens, like the
who?
The Bush.
Yeah, they're British. They're the Americans by passport, but they're British by devotion. Because what is let's study what is the difference between a British system or the oligarchical system or the Anglo-Dutch liberal free trade system and the American system?
Well, they have the American system has a credit system.
Yeah.
Let's read the excerpt from the Constitution. Because I don't know, have you read the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution? No, it's 12 pages.
No, we're not going to read that.
I know everything. So just a small paragraph. But it's a good document. It's not long. It's very easy to read. You know, it's very inspiring. It's Section 8 is saying, "The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duty, employer excuses, to pay the debt, and to provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States." So this power to lay taxes, to duties, and impose, are for the purpose for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. Okay? But all the duties, imposed, excuses shall be uniform throughout the United States. To regulate the commerce with foreign nation, to establish a uniform rule of naturalization, uniform laws, subject of bankruptcy through the United States, to coin the money, to regulate the value thereof, of the foreign coin, and fix the standard of weight of measure. So the thing is, this is the power of the Congress. And the Congress is the people representative who are electing their representative for the purpose of guaranteeing their prosperity and their common defense and guaranteeing their welfare. What's happening is the Mr. Bernanke and the situation right now with Paulson, why this is anti-constitutional? And this is the answer. Because they are putting the debt of United States not for the purpose of building bridges, building development, building hospitals, building schools, providing power plant, electricity, building roads, highways. You know, they're not building this. This is for the purpose to bail out the former foreign nationals, foreign entities, you know, banks who are bankrupt.
Foreign entities being not part of USA.
Yes.
Or not only United States.
You have a British bank.
Some
gonna get
are in the United States.
Dollars, right?
Some
the
are
States
foreign.
Yeah. So
So basically, people are trying to bail out these financial institutions, but you're saying that they're robbing this money from the people. So basically,
yeah.
Well, I think at this point we should probably move on to something more of the either the 1989.
Yeah, but I wanted just to get one thing before we got there, because what we have to realize is that tradition is what's killing us right now. When you have anytime you make a breakthrough, you're going to a new technology. And as soon as you start using the technology, you're going to use up the resources. And it's a success. The fact that you're using the technology or that you're using the resources is a good, because you made a breakthrough and you're using this new resource. But you can't stay there. You can't be fixed in a system of tradition. You have to have a system which is always going to fundamental breakthroughs in science. And so you had a movement, LaRouche had a movement, and the baby boomers who are today they're grown adults, grown men, and you know, 50, 60, I don't know, years old, some of them. But you have people who have been in this movement at the initial stages, and maybe they not necessarily have learned exactly everything like LaRouche did. They're not necessarily thinking exactly like LaRouche did, and they kind of settled into habits of their own into this movement. But now we have a new generation which is building on the experience of running the first generation of a movement, or what was before the youth movement. And so LaRouche put these he said, you know, the movement was having problems in the sense that the culture is so corrupted that even people working with LaRouche are infiltrated with this disease of organizing themselves around a tradition or around a popular opinion. If you're in an office and then four people agree on something, and then you're the only one who doesn't agree, there's not a tendency, there's not a reflex to go and say, well, what is the principle? What is true? What is the best way to think about this? There's a reflex to just say, well, we are all for it, and you're not, so therefore we're going to do it this way.
Let's take a vote and fuck you.
Okay.
So you're saying people are inside the movement to poison the function?
No, it's not that they're poisoning. They're not there to do that necessarily. But you have to recognize the force and the trickiness of the culture when you have built in a tradition system, which is not based on a principle. The tradition is saying, what has worked before? Let's use whatever worked before for this time. But LaRouche flanks this at one point, and he realizes that we're going to make a basement team of young potential geniuses, or who are people who are becoming geniuses by studying the works, the fundamental work of science, coming from Kepler to Gauss to Pierre de Fermat to Riemann. And so they're being put in an environment where they're only youth and LaRouche, in a sense, where they're being isolated from the whole culture, because the culture is sick and the culture is going to try to corrupt them any chance they get. So the thing is, you got to create a safe environment, and you need some people who are very strong, who are not going to be insecure about where their next sexual adventure will come from. You know? Because this is a culture. How can you think when you're...
It's everywhere.
Yeah. How can you think when you're trying to think about these sexual ideas coming into your mind all the time? If you live in Montreal, you know what I mean. I mean, it's hard not to have this around you. And so the thing was to have a movement isolated in a way where they were able to work on the ideas, exclusively in a protected way from the culture which is corrupted. In order to create a renaissance, in order to create a new focus of the whole organization around the breakthroughs that this group will do in this basement.
Okay, so
there's such a group that has been studying together like for a few years and now?
Yeah.
For like 10, 15?
No. Well, the thing is, you have people who have done the equivalent. Well, if you think of the founding people of the movement, this movement is probably, this second generation of youth movement, it's probably 6-7 years old. People have been studying. And that's basically the amount of time. LaRouche was talking about this in one of the webcasts. It's, you have basically people who have studied the equivalent of a master's degree in science, but fundamental science, and they know more than what most universities, the best universities, are developing. When you come out of the universities today, you may know more facts than what these guys know, but they know nothing as
I
principles.
Feel really actually stupid when they come out.
Yeah.
I don't know anymore.
But the thing is, keep this in. Let's stay focused on this here, because you have. All the productivity of what we're going to do, of what everybody else in this organization is doing, is influenced, is the effect of the creative breakthroughs that are happening in a tiny office in LaRouche's home. And I just want to make people understand how this process works, because these are not people who are sitting listening to LaRouche all day talk, where LaRouche is giving them the answers. This is about LaRouche presenting the most interesting of paradoxes of the universe to this group of people, and challenging them to solve the paradox. And you basically torture them in a way that you present them with a little paradox. People go crazy and they have to fight between themselves to figure out how to solve this, how to get out of this mental prison or this mental paradox. And then if ever they get lost, you know, you might have LaRouche come in and say, are you guys lost? You know, maybe you need to go back this way. But the thing is not being done from the exterior, where the knowledge comes from outside of you, is being done from the work that you do in the method that you have to discover. How do you solve a paradox? How do you make a creative breakthrough of a universal physical principle? And that's what's going on right now. And the fact is that we're going to read more about this in the future, but we have major breakthroughs having been done. First of all, if you just go on our website and you look at all the work that's the effect of the work is presentations of the harmonies of the world, the new astronomy, these works by Kepler being studied and presented. The outcome, the presentation of the work is there for people to see, so that for the first time you have a dynamic website being able to help put the young mind or the young reader into facing these existential paradoxes, these questions, universal paradoxes, and being able to be steered along a pathway of development of real scientific thinking. And so this is the answer I have just given, which is something I read in one of the briefings, where you have people that meet us in the street. And they say, oh yeah, I see you guys' tables all the time, but you know, I just think you're like anybody else, just running a political thing, and you're like just another campaign and whatever. We're not another campaign.
No, for sure.
We're not a regular Joe Schmo campaign. We're not running an issue. We're not running a little thing for to save the environment or to save whatever you want, whatever white ribbon or green ribbon or
we are
pink ribbon.
Candidate.
We are a revolutionary movement. And we're giving leadership to humanity. This is what we're doing here. Don't fool yourself. This is not a church. This is not a religion. This is about not only figuring out what we're supposed to do while we're on Earth, being creative, you know, but it's actually doing it and getting other people to do it. Because if we can know this, why not do it?
So if I put this correctly, like you said, Lelouch had people in his movement thinking differently from his principles and created a youth movement to promote what he was thinking, right?
Well, LaRouche always had an idea of what true education was. Mm-hmm. And the idea was that he had this first generation of youth movement, mm-hmm. and the second generation, they were building it up in a new way. And he adopted a new principle into how to develop this movement. Okay. And he uses the young people who are leading the science work, puts them together, and concentrates this intellectual potential into making the breakthroughs to educate the rest of the movement. To inspire the rest of the movement, and for the movement to inspire the rest of civilization.
Also, LaRouche wants to pass on how he is such a
his method,
successful forecaster.
Yeah,
because he does it on the theorem of algebra by Gauss,
okay.
in 1799, and other things, whatnot. But when he dies, you have to have other people
okay.
who can actually continue. This kind of a forecasting, it's very important.
Yeah, because we don't believe that genius is just our random acts of luck.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
We believe that, or actually we know that we have in every one of us, every human being, the potential to be creative geniuses, creative scientific geniuses. Okay? So the thing is, it's not about... we just have to create that society. We just have to live up to our potential. And it's going to take some leadership. LaRouche has decided to be the first one and taken up that challenge in recent history. And he's basically the only one left we have from this generation of the pre-baby boomers. And before he's gone, he's going to make sure that he has been creative enough to get us to think the way Lin thinks, the way Lyndon LaRouche thinks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Maybe not exactly the same. Maybe.
Well, not to think what, like what he likes and things like that, but to have the same method into understanding dynamic processes.
Yeah.
And I think that's now. Would be a good time to watch this video.
Yes.
Part two. Any question?
I mean, LaRouche, I mean, I had a little problem with saying that LaRouche is the only one. LaRouche might have great ideas. I'm sure these ideas could be shared with other scholars, like other universities, other great minds around the world that could, that might be a good idea. So let's add all those people together and organize like an international conference. I mean, that could be practical if you want.
Well, that's interesting.
The problem is very few people actually know what he knows. You know, sometimes, a scientist is alone. He's outside of the humanity in certain fashion because the thing he just discovered, nobody else knows on the planet. You know, when Kepler discovered the elliptical orbit of the planet, the thing is, I'm saying this because, we have a lot of misunderstanding for LaRouche. You know, the people think, LaRouche, he's Superman, he's a bunch of guy who believes in LaRouche, cult of personality, what this guy is.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, this is a very smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's 85, he's writing articles 86. Every day, 86. He's writing articles every day,
mm-hmm.
he's writing articles faster than we can read. Okay. He remembered a book from 30 years ago. He gonna tell you, make an analysis about a book he wrote 30, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. The guy's a genius. The thing is, he forecast the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1983. What's happening is he was appointed by Ronald Reagan to represent the U.S. government in the back channel discussion with the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And when the Russians said, we will not go with the Strategic Defense Initiative, and will not even have a discussion about it, what's happening, he said, you know what, I will tell you something. In 5 years, the Soviet economy is going to disintegrate, you guys are going to be out of business. Mm-hmm. Okay? So the thing is, the Russians, they have academicians. They have military industrial complex, they have satellites, they have nuclear bombs, they have hydrogen bombs, they have weapons, and this kind of stuff. And they are looking at this guy, telling him, well, the Soviet Union is going to collapse. And they say, you're full of shit, you don't know what you're talking about. So they went back home, they checked their books, they checked their academician, and said, we're fine. We're here for 70 years, we have more nuclear bombs than the Americans have. Nobody can tell me our regime is going to go. And their regime was gone. So the thing is, they, when LaRouche came out of jail in 1996, they invited Linda LaRouche saying, what's up? How you knew this? The thing is, yeah. I'm saying this because this is not just a statement. We have a statement of,
so
which was...
So now they asked, how come you knew it? So now he explained,
exactly.
He
this is
the fact.
Yes, so the thing is, so I'll show you something very fast. You know, like the difference he was addressing between education. You know, what's the problem with education today? Like, if you take this A plus B equal a B plus A. Do you agree with this?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if I go up A, if I go right B, if I go right B, and I go right up, what's happening? I'm going to come to the same point. Do you agree with this? If I do it this way.
So you're thinking about it now.
Yes.
Instead of merely algebraically.
See,
now
so the thing is, this is
movement.
Action up, going right. And we're going to change B plus A. B is going in this direction again. And A is going up, same direction. This will arrive to the same point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's happening is, do you believe who the Earth is flat?
I believe what?
The Earth is flat.
Okay.
So, it's not flat. So if I go up, I'm going to arrive here. If I go right, I'm going to arrive here. And this is my final location. So that I go back to the original point, I try to repeat the change again. I'm going right, and I'm going up, and I arrive here. Here is not here. Okay. So what this mean about this formula?
Is an assumption.
This means the formula is having something which is not in the formula. Which the thing which is not in the formula, if you don't know it, you're gonna break your neck. The formula can be true only in the flat surface. But the thing is, if you memorize the formula without knowing the domain in which you can apply the formula, you become an Osama bin Laden. So you say A plus B equal B plus A. And you get a good your professor is saying, excellent, you pass the test, you take your diploma, you're ready to kill yourself and your neighbors and everybody else because you don't know what you are doing when you're doing your engineering. So you happening, you have a student, which are young, funny guys, funny girls, and they're coming out of the university. And they have a bunch of formulas going on in their head. And the thing is, they have a computer, they look for the formulas, and they can build this and build that. They don't know anything.
You know, that happened to Mercedes, when they did a Mercedes truly on the computer, the benchmark and everything. And then when they tried out the Mercedes, it went over 80, and you would...
So the reason why I'm saying you are living in the neo-feudal society without even knowing it. What's happening, I'm going to train you so you can be able to perform a certain kind of operation. Okay? You can work in the factory, you can drive your car, you can teach you to be a doctor to know for which sickness what kind of pill to give. But the thing is, you don't know the principle and the science and the understanding of the human body, And this means you're going to kill somebody sooner or later. Okay? So the thing is that you have a society which is put in the philosophical and educational prison. So the thing is you are moving by the rules. If you don't know the rules, they have books where you can go find the rules. So the thing is you are going by the rules like this. And you are finding some professor who's going to tell you exactly what to do, or you're going to find, go to the university, pay $30,000 and get the, you're going to learn the rules. But the thing is you don't know the principle behind. The thing is you have a universe over there, and you as a human individual, as a young student, you have a natural joy of asking questions. Why? Papa, pourquoi ça va comme ça? Pourquoi le soleil se sort de là et descend là? Pourquoi les oiseaux peuvent voler? Pourquoi? The question is, this natural curiosity, natural capacity of the human beings to make a hypothesis and to discover a principle is something which is different. So when Pythagoras discovered the Pythagorean theorem, he didn't know it. He discovered it. But what was the problem he was working on? If I put him to work in the same problem, say, listen, this Pythagoras didn't know the answer, and he figured out by resolving this problem the Pythagorean theorem, probably will be the best way for him to learn the Pythagorean theorem. So I'm going to come to the class, I'm going to say, guys, you know what? This is a square which have the surface 1 and the sides 1. You know, I'm going to be back in 30 minutes. You have to figure out how to construct a square which going to have 2 times the surface. And I'm leaving. And you're alone because Pythagoras was alone. And that's the real education. So after 1 hour, you know, the student's going to bring the building down because they're jumping up and down and they're saying, we figured it out. And this is the way how in the moment of making this discovery, it is take, for the young people, it's taking 1 hour. For the oldest people, it's taking 3 days. They can figure out this. But the thing is, in the moment when you make the breakthrough and you figure out the solution, you can look beyond your shoulder and you can see the Pythagoras smile because he did the same thing exactly in the same order. So the thing is, you can see the mind of somebody 2,000 years back who spoke a different language than you, and you can be having a human touch to this mind because you were able to replicate the scientific breakthrough. The discovery of the joy of making a discovery, he experienced. And that's the idea of our movement. The idea is the people to stop acting into the, like a lemmings, going left, going right, go forward, backward, using the rules of the game which gonna kill them, because the advantage of today is much more easier to bring the people out of the game because the system is breaking. Before, I was not able to bring the people out of the game because everybody says everything is okay. This is maybe a good intellectual discussion, but the thing is, I'm all right. Right now, it's different. People are saying the thing is not all right. I cannot pay my rent. I don't have a healthcare. You know, the debt is coming after me. The healthcare will not be paid for the baby boomers who are going to retire. The inflation is killing you. So the thing is, you're saying, suddenly you need to know what was wrong with the system. Mm-hmm. What was wrong with the system was this. The thing is, we can tell you in all the economics, the credit, how to build this, how to build that. But most fundamentally, the reason why you went into the system, how you get sucked into the system, is because this method of education was there, and you were a victim of genocide. A mental genocide, because we deny to you to be human. That was the genocide. This is the way how we destroyed you. The entire generation of the baby boomer was destroyed by this method. And the people who developed the system were criminals in the science of Nuremberg.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks,
Edward.
So this speaker is on. I'm going to turn the